My name's Sean Collier, outside the AMC Lowe's Waterfront 22 with Andy Collier.
Hello again.
For a special retro episode, hey, in case you weren't feeling old, you know, they do retro films every Wednesday night here, and they decided to honor the 20th anniversary of Twister. Twister is 20 years old this year. So we figured this was a good time to revisit and see, is this a good movie? And no, not really.
No.
Yeah. We'll get into that and tell you why and ruin your memories this week on You Can't Handle the Truth.
And now, it's You Can't Handle the Truth. Honest reviews of the newest movies. Part of the Epicast Network. Hear more great podcasts at epicast.tv.
It is You Can't Handle the Truth for Friday, February 13th. Hey, it's Friday the 13th, everybody.
Oh, nice.
2016. Joined once again by my brother, Andy Collier. How's it going?
It's going okay. Here's my theory. Is Twister 20 years old, or did we go back in time? Because I swear to God, I was in the bathroom after the little AMC radios playing, the song finished, and they said that was the new song by Collective Soul. I said, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, that ain't right.
And then they said, catch them on tour this summer with Goo Goo Dolls. And I said, that, get the fuck out of here.
But as you know, from concerts I go to, this happens all the time. I thought, do I want to go see the Wallflowers and Blues Traveler? I thought that.
It's the sky blast in you.
Yeah, yeah. But no, we are in 2016 and the movie is 20 years old. And I have something of a fond memory of this movie from childhood. And I think I probably caught most of it on the couch since then.
I have a relatively fond memory of it as a childhood. I think we may have attended it with our parents.
Yeah, probably.
I think I remember being in a theater seeing this.
Yeah, and certainly the 90s version of spectacular effects.
Yeah.
Which hold up okay. I'm not in
it
there.
It doesn't look bad.
I'm not in there thinking that doesn't look like a tornado.
No, it doesn't look bad. And that's one of the only good parts of it.
Yeah, there was I think it was a found footage movie called Into the Storm, maybe 2 years ago. If it's the thing I'm thinking of, there's a bonus episode of this show on it.
Okay,
and maybe because it's found footage, but it didn't look notably better than the action in Twister. I think that one had a fire tornado, which there are no fire tornadoes in this. So that's fine. And there are some good scenes that come out of that. That drive-in scene is really good.
Yeah. sorry. Yeah, it is. It is. The Shining is the best part of it.
Yeah, there's 10 seconds of this movie where this movie stops and The Shining plays. And yeah, those are the best 10 seconds of the movie by far.
Here's what I couldn't get past by the end. And I was being like slapped across the face by this knowledge that I never noticed before. This is one action scene repeated 4 times for 2 hours.
Yeah,
and that's the movie.
There is no structure to this thing at all. You know, and when I thought back on it, I thought, okay, there's a first act where he encounters some tornadoes with his fiance, and then there's a second act where nothing happens for a while, and they go to Aunt May's house. And then there's a third act where they find the big tornado. That's not the structure of this movie. There's, I think, six tornadoes, and they're each separated by about 10 minutes. And the first five, you know, they slap some plot in between them, but there's not really, like, a build. It's like, oh, this one didn't work. This one didn't work. This one didn't work. This one didn't work. Hey, it worked.
This was, like, 2 days in time, which I did not realize.
Less than that. It's about 24 hours.
It's about 24 hours. And this was Bill Paxton returning to Helen Hunt to get signed divorce papers.
Yeah.
Helen Hunt is chasing tornadoes with her and Bill Paxton's old crew.
Yes.
Without real explanation of what has happened in this in-between time.
No.
Not needed, though. But he snaps right back into it, just with his fiancée along for the ride. This was interrupting their everyday work to get divorce papers signed, and unfortunately there was 4 tornadoes. And the same thing happened over and over again. They drive towards the tornado, they drive away from the tornado.
Yeah, I know that drama is the day that that something remarkable happens, but they have to, like, hammer home. Someone mentions 10 times in the first 20 minutes, never been anything like this before. Never. It's just one, you know, one unbelievable occurrence after the other. And I get that it's an action movie and, you know, fine. But the relatively small amount of death in this movie, which I saw pointed out on some YouTube video, the opening scene is the tornado that Joe, Helen Hunt, experienced as a child that killed her father. His death completely unnecessary.
Oh, completely unnecessary.
He's trying to hold the door closed when the rest of his family is just on the other side of the storm cellar and fine. The door is inconsequential. He just is so set on holding that door closed that he dies.
When he blows away with the door,
yeah,
nothing happened to his wife and child.
Oh, or
they
the dog.
They didn't get sucked out or anything.
Yeah.
He did not need to be holding that door.
Yeah, so What am I talking about here? So that's the first thing. And then,
I remember that from child. I thought that was a frightening scene.
Yeah, that was a frightening scene.
And as a kid, it was scary. And I saw it again, and I was like, that's gripping.
That
you didn't need to die.
But. That and the reason that and the drive-in are the most compelling scenes is because every other one of them is about Helen Hunt and Bill Paxton getting caught in the tornado, and they're just fine every time.
Every single time.
And there's not one where it kind of hits them. Like, they, like 3 or 4 tornadoes go straight through them, and they're fine.
And Cary Elwes?
Yes.
Cary Elwes took one wrong turn, and he was dead.
Yeah, he is the only... He and his driver are the only people to perish through the course of a day full of the worst tornadoes ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the script. The script is bad. The script is, you know, the reason that Philip Seymour Hoffman is kind of good is because he just embraces the terrible dialogue full-throatedly.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of them just kind of try to act straight on this really hokey dialogue. And it just is, you know, beyond most of them to sell even for a second.
I mean, this is, I found out, co-written by
Michael Crichton.
My Michael Crichton. Making sure this wasn't some other Michael Crichton.
No, that's the one.
But, I mean,
it's not based on a book.
He cannot in any way actually be responsible for this. He had to have written a movie that was punched up by removing things.
Well, look at Jurassic Park 2, where they were so desperate to make a sequel that he wrote another book. That book is not good, but it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works. And then the movie has almost nothing to do with the book. Because at that time, he was churning out these ideas, and then some screenwriter would, you know, do whatever with them. Even the movie Jurassic Park isn't too much like the book.
I mean, I can believe that, yeah.
But yeah, the script is just, you know, the structure is the real problem, that it is just one scene over and over again, but nothing on the page is good.
No, thinking about the question, is this a good movie while watching it, I was thinking that the filmmakers pretty much did everything right. It just is a project that shouldn't have been conceived. No one should see that script and be like, well, we gotta make this. As far as making it, it looks good. It is, you know, action and a little bit of drama filled. But I just don't understand reading that script that says nothing.
Yeah.
And being like, well, green lights.
I think
and
that
Steven Spielberg was an executive producer.
Yeah, well, he's done. He has especially produced plenty of crap.
Sure.
I think I have this right. You know, and I was 11 when this came out, so I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that what happened is this is when people were kind of first aware that storm chasers were a thing. They might not have been a thing much before that in any sort of scientific sense because, you know, clearly these people are operating with what was on the cutting edge of technology in 1996,
sure.
These scientists. So I think, you know, there was some buzz about storm chasers and thought, oh, we got to make a movie about tornadoes. But it's not a disaster movie. It's a a science movie, like a lot of Michael Crichton things are, like Jurassic Park is or Congo is. It's kind of, here's this scientific flight of fancy, you know, let's roll with that.
Yeah, but in Jurassic Park, they made sure the stuff happened.
Yeah.
That science doesn't exist that you can actually pinpoint DNA from.
Yeah.
That's statistically impossible to find that.
Yeah.
They didn't have a problem with that because otherwise they would have had no dinosaurs.
Yeah.
I mean, I get right what you're saying with around that time, somebody probably, you know, read a long read in the New York Times about people like this and thought, that is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
This could be a movie. But this is not that movie, is the thing.
Well, and they went in exactly the wrong direction trying to, give it some human stakes. The relationship angle is really flimsy. You know, if you haven't seen this in a while, he shows up with his fiance, and as we said, he's trying to get his ex, Helen Hunt, to sign divorce papers. But that's really just to give them a reason to not be on the same page. But then they never really are. As soon as he shows up, the band's back together.
Yeah.
You know, I get that, you know, you would have had to... I don't even think you had to do anything with that. I think that the story is about her losing her father in a tornado and driven for that reason to fight him.
And the human
you killed my father.
That's the only thing they ever come back to with any regularity that kind of drives it forward.
Yeah.
It's pinpointed to explain her inhibitions with... her lack of inhibitions with doing this job, how she throws caution and safety to the wind. She actually sees...
To the wind, that's a tornado
to
joke.
To the wind. She actually sees that image of her younger self and her mother and her father when they get to the wrecked town.
Mm-hmm.
After the climax tornado number 6,
mm-hmm.
before, and that they're coming out and everything is okay, the first thing you see is a family coming out of a bomb shelter.
Yeah.
And they're okay. So they return to it, but the relationship
Twister
thing,
spoilers. Sorry.
The relationship thing, almost entirely unnecessary.
No, and what's completely unnecessary is the other subplot is about this rival storm chaser team who are better funded and arrogant, but... Bill Paxton can sift dirt through his fingers and know where a tornado is going to be, and Cary Elwes doesn't have that. And they spend a lot of time on this rival team. The only reason they're in the movie is so that two people can die who aren't good guys. And that's just kind of... I mean, I get that, you know... If good guys had died, you don't care that science is happening, but it's, you know, it's just so, so forced.
Yeah, definitely a little underwritten there, but I don't care to know more.
No.
And I don't want this movie to be a minute longer. It was like 1:45 or something, and for one action scene to repeat 4 times, that was a long 1:45.
Yeah, it felt a lot longer than it was. You know, and you have, you know, beloved Aunt May, her town gets hit by the tornado, and that's where the real stakes are, and, you know, there is a lot of devastation in this small town in Kansas, but She's fine. She, like, breaks her wrist.
She does the stuff that old ladies do when there's not a tornado.
Right. She has normal old lady injuries. And it's, you know, that's you know, like a focus group. Oh, we can't have the old woman die because then the audience will check out. This feels like you needed several more drafts. And not punch up, but like, no, this doesn't work. Keep the tornadoes and the storm chasers and go back to the drawing board.
I mean, if this
and
is
keep
a summer,
the Helen Hunt thing and her dad, and then
yeah, if this is a summer action blockbuster, this was not intense enough.
No,
and I mean, as you said, she breaks her wrist, but she's immediately dismissed so that she can go see the F5 and repeat the same scene.
Two more
times.
Two more times. Which, they don't even really escalate. Each one is just a little different.
Yeah.
This one's on the water. This one's in a ditch.
That one's black. Yeah. This one's primarily gray.
Yeah, it's...
Hail. Rain.
Yeah.
It's...
But what are those bad guys doing there? Other than to allow Bill Paxton to disgustedly say, he's about the money, not the science. One of 300. Man, Bill Paxton is
awful.
Paxton
is so, so bad. I was with a friend right before this saying I was going to go do this.
Uh-huh.
And he said, why would you want to sit through that and watch Bill Paxton's acting? I know he's not good, but I don't remember it being this bad.
It's really bad.
He cannot deliver. I noticed early on, I could see some, during like a non-action scene, I could see some ADR, audio dialogue replacement, that
sure.
was surely dubbed. And I was thinking, well, they probably had to do that a lot in this movie, because even when something's not happening, they're outdoors, they're these big, you know, it's on location.
Yeah,
big expansive sets of the countryside.
And the sound, by the way, is good.
Mm-hmm.
The sound, you know, design of the film is one of the stars. And so under those circumstances, it's very difficult to capture dialogue.
Correct. But I was thinking, like, it almost seems like this is how bad Paxton is. It almost seems like someone led him into the fact that they were probably going to have to re-record a lot of this dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So he just started saying everything louder.
Yeah.
Not like people do at all.
Yeah.
Like, he can't say okay and have it sound... He cannot sell the word okay. He can't be normal about it.
I wonder if he didn't care, but if you look at the... time period, you know, this is after Jurassic Park and after Independence Day.
He was about to do Titanic.
Yeah, it was certainly during a time period where people weren't winning Oscars for movies like this, but people like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park and Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day and Will Smith in Independence Day, people in action movies who did well got a lot of, you know, good notices for it and got work out of it.
Got work and a lot of money out of it.
Yeah, but here he seems like he'd rather not be there in every scene.
What else does Bill Paxton have to do?
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing around the time.
Helen Hunt deserves a nomination for being able to sit next to Bill Paxton delivering those lines and keep going.
Yeah, she's not good either.
No.
But
no.
I think that in comparison to him, she looks a lot better. And she's the protagonist, without a doubt.
Yeah. But, I mean, how many takes would they have to do this when he's supposed to say, you gotta let it go, and he says, you gotta let it go, Joe?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's like you remember at that time there were a lot of, like, network made-for-TV movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I distinctly remember one on Fox about killer bees.
Yeah, and they were like big summer attractors.
Right.
Like Fox and USA and stuff.
Right. Yeah. It was like the acting in that, where it's like, look, we really don't have anybody. We've called people up from Lifetime, essentially, and they might have a chance at, you know, comporting themselves decently well. That's the level that he's at.
It's so bad. It's so, so bad.
Cary Elwes is
himself.
Yeah, I mean, he's good in Saw, and he's a comedy actor. You know,
he really is.
He's good in Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and he's good in The Princess Bride. He's
good in Liar Liar.
I don't think he is.
Because he also has difficult delivery in a normal line, and it kind of makes him a comic actor in some ways.
Right. And two Saw movies. Did I already say Saw?
He's in two of them?
Yeah, he was in the first one.
Is there a bunch of flashbacks in one of them that had him in it?
That was every sequel to Saw.
That's true.
The first, like, Saw 2 and 3 were just sequels, but every remaining one was about, actually, it was this guy running the show, and eventually that got around to him.
He's pretty solid in Saw.
Yeah, he was fine. But Philip Seymour Hoffman is a delight.
He really is. In the same, I get they have to have a team.
Uh-huh.
But with the exception of Philip Seymour Hoffman, none of the good guy team have as little place there as do the rival team. Most of them have about two lines.
The only one you'd recognize is Alan Ruck from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
When we got out of there, I was thinking, man, there's at least two of these people who I don't even think we ever heard their name.
No, I don't think so.
And that's a more interesting movie. If you just make it about the interplay between this team, and this team is the only characters, then we are more invested in what each of them is doing when it's going on. That has something to do with the fact that, I guess this is a storm-chasing team thing, only the lead actors actually get close to the tornado and everyone else hangs back and observes from a distance.
Yeah.
But you could have done so much more with them.
I mean, you were 11, so I was 7 when this came out. I don't remember what was cool in the late 90s, but they tried to make, like, every member of that team, like, kind of kitschy and, like, you wanted to hang out with them. Mm. Philip Seymour Hoffman is the only one who does it. Like, they're all losers. They really are. Like, this did not seem like, man, I want to be one of these guys. Like, they're not fun.
No.
Philip Seymour Hoffman is, but that's it.
Well, the director, to place some blame, the director is Jan de Bont. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly.
He's, Jan de Bont.
He's Dutch. And he didn't do much. In fact, he's directed 5 movies. They are both Speeds.
Oh, yeah.
Twister, the remake of The Haunting from 99, and then one of the Tomb Raider movies. So...
Ooh.
You know, he's directed like one and a quarter good movies,
Speed,
if you give a lot of credit to Speed.
I tend to. Speed is really, really good compared to this.
I believe you. I don't think I've seen it since I was, I don't think I saw it when it came out, but I didn't see it much after that either.
Yeah, a lot of people have bad things to say about her, but like that is exactly what Sandra Bullock is made for.
Mm-hmm.
Helen Hunt looks like the discount Sandra Bullock in this. I mean, Keanu Reeves is as funny as anybody delivering lines, but Bill Paxton looks just like the discount Keanu Reeves in this.
Yeah, Keanu is just as bad, but he's so goofy that it's entertaining.
Yeah.
Where Bill Paxton is just a non-factor.
Yeah.
But Jan de Bont is much more... He really stopped doing stuff. I was looking over his IMDb. He's pretty much done. But he started in the 70s, so that's fine.
Hmm.
But he is much more a cinematographer. He's a cinematographer for Die Hard, for, I think, Hunt for Red October.
Hunt for Red October, a couple of Lethal Weapons, it looks like. Yeah.
And produced later on, produced Minority Report and some stuff. But he's a cinematographer. And he was the cinematographer for Twister. That was all fine. In fact, that or the sound might be the best stuff. It's shot very well. It all looks not only convincing, but very, the shots of the sky are probably the best stuff in Twister.
Yeah, I mean, it's visually motivated, and that keeps you going.
Right.
Past, like, having to keep listening to Bill Paxton.
Yeah. But, I think that, and the fact that he didn't get much more work, You know, I mean, Twister, I think Twister was relatively warmly received. It made a lot of money. And I don't think it was panned. But those next three, Speed 2, The Haunting, and the whichever Lara Croft movie, none of those were, you know, regarded even decently. So, you know, I think he's just not really a director.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, if photographer is your profession, which a lot of directors are photographer and cinematographer, I mean, that's what they're doing. To think that you can, like, seamlessly take the wheel of the whole production after that is a little ambitious.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe it took a couple of really, really okay action or drama, whatever this was, to discover that he can't really do it.
And it's...
I don't really want to talk badly about anyone that makes a movie, but, you know.
Yeah, and the stakes are also really low. I mean, we're back to hammering on the story again. Mm-hmm. I understand that they're very high for Helen Hunt's character, mm-hmm. but fundamentally we're talking about getting some good science done that theoretically could be positive. And it's...
Those are your stakes of your summer blockbuster. That's
right.
Too low, buddy.
It's not that everything needs to be either the world is ending or if this doesn't work out, we're all going to die. There's exceptions to that. But if you want to make a disaster movie, just make a disaster movie. Just, you know, make it so that, you know, here are these people. We don't know if they're going to make it out. And a couple of them don't.
Yeah.
That's such a winning formula.
I kind of couldn't believe... I even remember some of the visuals. But when she said, broken wrist, bump on the head, I couldn't believe that that's how it actually went. I remembered it differently.
Yeah.
I thought they were, like, telling Helen Hunt that she has, like, internal bleeding. Like, these
well, yeah, she had
moments.
She had most of a floor lying on her chest.
I couldn't believe that it was like, I'm fine, keep going. And I was like, well, that's the problem with this movie. If everybody's fine, it doesn't matter that much.
Well, and...
And I'm with you. You're right. It doesn't have to be the end of the world. But you know what I was probably thinking of? I was probably thinking of Independence Day. When the president's wife is going to die.
Yeah.
You know, I
You gotta...
Stakes have to be high.
You gotta kill somebody other than someone in the cold open... And then the bad guys who we hate, one of whom was not developed at all.
He was the driver. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a mess. And it just would have been so much better with that normal disaster form. That's why a movie like San Andreas came out last summer and is not very good, but is probably a more satisfying experience than this, because it's just, hey, some shit went down and The Rock has to save his family. That's a much easier basket to put up. I don't know basketball terms. That's a much easier swing than trying to get us to care about this theoretical science, which they even undercut by saying, well, right now people only have 3 minutes warning. If this goes right, they could have 15 minutes warning. I get that that's all the difference in the world when it comes to a tornado, but it still sounds like, oh, okay. Their house is still going to be knocked down and shit.
Yeah, I'm not trying to downplay what these people actually live through. I will once again say, do you have to live in that part of the country?
Yeah.
It's amazing that, you know, those happen so much and will be happening more with climate change that it's amazing certain areas in the middle of our country are not exactly like, you know, Greenland, which is well, it's there, but nobody can live there.
Yeah.
It's just a miracle that it's not empty.
Yeah. I've never been there.
It
doesn't seem like much of a vacation destination.
Yeah. Sorry, Kansas.
So, we'll get to a rating at the end here, but I think what we're saying is, if you ever go, Twister, I wonder if that holds up. You don't need to sit through this again.
Don't really need to do it. We were talking about a period where the big, big summer movies that you remember got real bad. I mentioned Armageddon.
Armageddon might be better than this.
Actually, after seeing it, yeah. I don't think it's quite... It wasn't in that meaty part from, you know, 1999 to 2003.
The real lull, yeah, is in the early 2000s when, before comic book movies got good, and, you know, you really just had nothing going on in terms of these big tentpole releases.
Yeah, I mean, it just amazes me that more didn't happen. What's the ride at Universal? Is it like the Backdraft thing?
None of that's there anymore.
Well, that's disappointing.
There was a Twister ride.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I was going to say, it reminds me. I remember the Backdraft thing where all of a sudden...
And there's like, an earthquake, right?
Maybe it's the earthquake.
Yeah.
You're like a disaster movie set, and then it all like just folds back together.
Yeah.
Just do the ride. We don't need this movie. That's what it feels like after the first tornado. You're like, that was fun. And you're just like, oh, there's another hour and a half.
Yeah, there's... I went to Universal a couple of months ago. I talked about it on the podcast. But, yeah, it's sad. I remember being there a couple of times as a kid, and there is nothing there from when we were kids.
There's no E.T.
E.T. was the last one, and it's not going to last much longer.
And you said there's no Jaws.
Jaws is gone. Back to the Future is gone.
This is a disgrace.
King Kong is gone, but they're doing a new one to tie in with next year's King Kong movie.
This is a disgrace. I want to petition my congressman or Florida's. I don't know what district it is. I'm going to find out. That's terrible.
I mean, the new stuff's all great.
I'm sure.
The Harry Potter stuff and the Simpsons stuff. And, there were other things. That never needs to go away.
Sharks are not getting less popular.
You know, Disney World isn't doing that. Disney World is always adding stuff, but when they, you know, the Dumbo ride is still there. Anyway.
Yeah.
I like the soundtrack to Twister. It has one of the two good Sammy Hagar Van Halen songs, Humans Being, that plays twice.
It had a cut from one of the last Goo Goo Dolls albums before they got bad.
Yeah,
Long Way Down.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Tori Amos is in there at the beginning. It's a 90s soundtrack.
It's a 90s soundtrack.
It does fine. It does fine for itself. But maybe buy the soundtrack if you're feeling nostalgic for Twister. We'll be back after a word from the Epicast Network.
Hey, yo, I'm Ed Bailey. I'm here with
Dave Brayson.
And we are the Drinking Partners Podcast on Epicast Network. Fucked it up. Make sure you check us out, man. We got the Comedy Fuel, which is really supposed to be beer fueled comedy podcast, but.
Craft Beer Fuel Pot. Motherfucker. All right. Man. I'm going to have to write that down.
Craft Beer Fuel Comedy. Those are not four words that you say normally. All right. Craft Brew. You knew that I was going to fuck up. You knew.
Craft Beer Fuel Comedy Podcast.
All right, so Craft Beer Fuel Comedy Podcast on.
You can find us on epicastnetwork.com/partnerspod. You can find us at partnerspod on Facebook, Twitter, and IG. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and Libsyn under Drinking Partners.
Yo, if you ain't heard and if you don't know, Drinking Partners is the crew. Epicast is the family. Make sure you check us out, man.
And we're back. Hey, a shout out to our sponsor, Goods and Evil. You hear Aaron talking about it every week. You need a Friday the 13th shirt in your life or an Army of Darkness shirt in your life. You go to goodsandevil.com. Lots of great zombie stuff for all of the zombie fanatics out there. I'm trying to remember the last good zombie movie.
Probably Zombieland. Could it be that?
Could be Zombieland. There's got to be something more recent than that. I didn't see... Well, World War Z was pretty good.
Did not see it.
I did not see Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, didn't know that even came out.
That happened. Yeah. It occurred. You know, you're a zombie lover. You go to goodsandevil.com. You're into lots of things. Just go check them out. It's one of those things where you're going to go, I wonder what they have, and then you're going to end up buying something. And when you do, use the offer code HANDLE, HANDLE, like you can handle the truth, and we'll give you a little bit of a discount. That is goodsandevil.com. Always thrilled to have them as a sponsor. I want to plug again, Saturday, May the 21st, The Loaded Show at Club Cafe if you're in the Pittsburgh area. Aaron will be on that. I'm hosting it. A great lineup of comics. Always a great lineup at the Loaded Show. Those do sell out, so go to clubcafelive.com and buy tickets now if you're thinking about coming out for the Loaded Show. Here's a question I have for you for extra butter, and this might be a short conversation. But I got a little pessimistic about the state of movie making. I was listening to some other podcast, and there was a discussion about the movie Network. Have you seen Network?
Sandra Bullock?
No, that's The Net.
The Net.
Network is from the 70s. I'm mad as hell.
From the bus.
Yeah.
No.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Sure. No, I haven't.
Fade Dunaway, isn't it?
Network.
Very, very good. If anyone hasn't seen Network, you have to see that. But it got me to thinking about, you know, serious classic movies. You know, we're here on AMC's classic movie night is every Wednesday, and coming up they have some that are undeniably, you know, fit that bill. They're doing Jaws soon, and they're doing Alien soon, and
Twister
and Pulp Fiction, and you know, there's some that are undeniably classic movies. I don't know that there are undeniably classic movies anymore. You know, I was thinking about Network, and then I'm thinking about that era, and thinking about Chinatown and The French Connection, and All the President's Men and The Exorcist. I'm trying to figure out, is there a movie from the last 5 years that will be thought of the way that Chinatown is 30 years from now? And, well, 40 years from now, if Twister is 20 years old. You know, Aaron and I talk a lot about Interstellar. You know, the world is yet to catch up to us on that. And then I thought, okay, well, what do I think are the best movies in the past few years? And I think about Gravity and Spotlight and The Revenant and, you know, 12 Years a Slave, maybe. But I don't know that any of those, all of those movies, I think all of those movies I just named, I gave a 10 or something close to it and said, yeah, this is one of the best movies of the year. Everybody should see it. I don't know that there are Chinatowns anymore. And is that just not being able to see it while it's happening? Or do you think there's something to that?
I see where you're going, but it would definitely be perspective is possibly what's weighing you down here. But I mean, I'm trying to answer the same question that you posed. You know, somebody else on your, it was one of the episodes where they were making fun of you for having Crash at Row House.
Right.
And somebody said,
as well they should.
As somebody said, whoever was your guest that week said, that's like a couple years from now being like, man, I want to see Spotlight again on the big screen.
Yeah.
And it was definitely, the way he was delivering it, it was a clear knock on Spotlight.
Yeah.
And I kind of reacted the same way you did, thinking that was a great movie. That was great, very difficult storytelling by a filmmaker. But the same thing posed at me again, I kind of thought exactly in that category. It was like, I don't think I'm going to really remember Spotlight 20 years down the line.
No.
And how great that was. I mean, I walked out of there and told people about it, and then like, I mean, a couple days later, I wasn't still thinking about it.
And the fact that the subject matter is what it is, you know, is going to hurt your desire to go back and watch Spotlight again. But that's not true of, you know, I had Gravity as my number one film of the year, 2 or 3, in 2014. And I definitely stand by that. But I don't know that, you know, 10 years from now, they're going to be talking about Gravity in a classroom. You know, I same with Birdman. Birdman, I think, is that good, but is this, are you know, are Birdman and Gravity inherently less enduring works than Chinatown and
When you said last Network? 5 years, Birdman is the one that popped out to me. But, you know, maybe it's the problem. If the answer to your question is yes, movies like that are not being made right now, I would have to go back to saying that's because the problem is all of the money in Hollywood is going to create these huge blockbusters like the comic book movies. And even though you know this, but for those listening, I don't do the comic book movies. I just can't get onto it.
It's a big, you know, horse to mount.
Of course. But we think pretty similarly about movies. You tell me they're good, I believe you.
Yeah.
And I know they're now, you know, really fantastic movies. But if all of the energy of these studios is to make big, elaborate, fantastic movies for these stories that have already been told.
Yeah.
Then I think that might be your problem.
Yeah.
Then the money and the effort and the advertising is for something that already exists as opposed to bright new ideas.
Yeah.
You're talking about Chinatown, but I'm talking about, like, I can't think of one like that that is anything like, I'm sorry, you were talking about Chinatown. I can't think of one example of that being like Jaws or Jurassic Park. There's nothing current like that because all of our money is in the branding reboots.
And to be fair,
I don't just mean money. All our money and all of our attention.
Yeah.
I cannot see. It could be the best thing. And you guys described it as just so kick-ass.
Yeah.
But I cannot imagine anybody remembering what even happens in Captain America Civil War a couple years down the line, let alone a couple decades.
Oh, no, because that's because it's the series. And we talked about that. It's the series much more than it's the individual film.
And there's something to that as well. That is quite a feat that they're accomplishing.
Yeah.
But I'd say it probably takes away from the question you're posing.
Yeah, it's that segment of filmmaking has definitely gotten a lot better. You know, and look at Twister or anything, you know, you think about 90s blockbusters. And, you know, you really can count the ones that you really think did something special on one hand. Mm-hmm. You know, Jurassic Park and maybe you can do it on one finger. Jurassic Park and Independence Day.
Yeah.
And, you know, probably some other ones. I mean, you can lump Die Hard in there. Well, Die Hard's 85. Those movies are the exception to the rule. You know, for every Jurassic Park, there were 10 Dante's Peaks in the 90s. And that's not really the case anymore. You still have your Fantastic Four every so often. But the majority of blockbusters that there's a lot of money and a lot of attention behind are, you know, an 8 or a 9. There's something good about, you know, rather than sequel, you know, making a bigger picture universe, as everyone's doing, as, you know, down to, you know, Star Wars is doing that too. That is definitely, you know, coming along just fine. It's just, you know, I think you're onto something where the budgets for the spotlights are nothing. And that doesn't prevent them from being good movies, and that doesn't prevent them from getting the best writers and actors, but no one goes into Spotlight thinking, how can we make $200 million with this?
Sure.
And people went into Chinatown and The French Connection and Jaws thinking, this is gonna make us filthy rich.
That is also reflected in look at your end of the year lists now. And, you know, again, we said those movies are getting so much better. So those superhero movies are not far down the depth chart for you.
Yeah.
But your top 8, 10, 12, you can now rattle off to a person on the sidewalk, and not only will they have seen none of them, but they may have not even heard of many of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a friend who's a photographer, and so he pays careful attention to film. He said, "Did you see anything good recently?" And I said, "You know what I did? I just saw Room. Oh, my God, knocked me on my ass." He had never even heard of it. And yeah. He's someone who pays attention. I mean,
things are
going to get worse if we stop. More than just this conversation, things will get continuously worse if we stop investing in ideas and stop investing in people that have them.
Yeah, and you can argue that we still are. You know, people give Christopher Nolan money. People give Iñárritu money. You know, that still happens, but they. It's almost a different thing. You know, it's almost we're in this for the acclaim and the awards, and if we, you know, end up making a couple of bucks, that's great. And people are still trying to do this. You know, I think that Spielberg is always trying to do this. I think Spielberg went into Bridge of Spies thinking about it like he thought about Jaws. But you need young filmmakers to make those kind of classics.
And I'm not saying all of this comes back to money, but I'm also talking about intent.
Yeah.
If your intent is to make only people, the only things that people pay attention to are, I'm sorry I keep calling out the superhero movies,
yeah,
but it's an easy example.
Or Jurassic World, or, you know, big budget action / sci-fi spectacles.
And it's nice that movies are back to this big experience.
Yeah.
But now it's not just independent filmmakers who are trying to scratch together small amounts of money so they can get something that maybe they can sell to Netflix. It's real producers and real...
Yeah.
I mean, it was like 4 or 5 years ago, I saw an interview with David Lynch where he said, "No one will give me money to make a movie."
Yeah.
And that's one of your greatest living directors saying that. And that's just a sad thing. I know he's an outlier because he makes weird movies.
Yeah.
But if a guy who's been nominated for Oscars and made some great, great films can't get money because he doesn't want to do something about a superhero or dinosaurs, I mean, that's just sad. I'm realizing content that exists that I've completely skipped over because it never hit theaters and never had any intention of, but fully produced, written, shot, acted films, good films are now, they're aiming, okay, let's do this so we can get it on video on demand immediately, so we can get it on Netflix immediately. And I love Netflix. I don't know if I'm saying that's bad, but I'm saying that's the direction that it's heading. If the only new ideas and really skillful and artistic filmmaking is for just awards, and you'll never run into them at a theater, I mean, that's a slippery slope.
Well, maybe it's and part of what you're getting at is also the way that the public talks about and pays attention to these movies. There's not like a big cultural dialogue around Spotlight that goes beyond movie nerds and people affected by the cause, where, you know, people are and part of this is an economy of scale thing where, you know, when there's so many fewer movies coming out each year, people talk about the good ones much longer and people are much more likely to see them. But, you know, there isn't like critical thought around a movie that a lot of people are exposed to. First, you know, only so many people see Room. I don't think Room made $25 million. And so very few people see it. And then, you know, the people who make it are not celebrities. The people who make it are not on every talk show, except for Brie Larson, because, you know, it was so lauded. But, you know, you're not hearing from that director and that writer. There's not this critical discussion of movies happening everywhere like there was at one time.
Yeah, and I don't want that to disappear.
No. Well, that's why we're here tonight. But, you know, and this might be it, too. It might be that the people with the capability to do that are just working in TV. You know, is Spotlight or are Spotlight or Gravity, are they going to be talked about like Chinatown in 30 years? No, but Breaking Bad is.
Yeah.
And The Sopranos is. It could be that. That kind of cultural power now is just on TV, which is not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, and this is, goes against what I just said, but I mean, it shows that the valuable people are figuring out a way to work and make money.
Yeah.
Through, you know, alternative. Well, I just call TV an alternative mean. That sounds stupid, but...
Well, it's a truck's going by, everybody. There it is. It's a big one. If a tornado were here, that truck and its driver would be in some serious trouble.
Yeah.
And now it's gone. It's an alternative for filmmaking. You know, you wouldn't have called, other than, you know, Twin Peaks and, you know, a couple of things, you know, starting in the 80s, they were certainly a valid, TV was a valid cultural product and a source of great cultural impact and societal impact, but it wasn't necessarily filmmaking like TV is now.
And it certainly wasn't the aspiration of filmmakers.
Yeah.
But it is now, so.
So what, if anything, I mean, I'm trying to think of the last 10 years before we go. What could be Network or Chinatown in 30 years?
The last 10 years, huh?
Maybe 12 Years a Slave. I'd like to think Interstellar. That could just be me and Aaron. Maybe No Country for Old Men.
I think of it like that. But again, we're not... We're still working on that perspective.
There Will Be Blood, maybe.
Here's an oxymoron, because I consider this different. Maybe The Dark Knight. Maybe you think about The Dark Knight that way.
Yeah.
I just pointed a bunch of blame on superhero movies and then referenced one that we had, but I think of it differently.
Well, it was. Not just because it was Christopher Nolan, but because... That's not... I don't really look at The Dark Knight and think of that as part of this crop.
I don't know.
I think that, you know, Batman Begins happened and it was good and they thought, oh, let's do a little more with this. And then there's a masterpiece. And then, he was like, well, we got to make another one. And he did and it was okay. Mm-hmm. That feels like a completely separate thing from the Marvel Universe, which I really like. The Dark Knight, I think, stands on its own among all of these. And that's what DC is unsuccessfully chasing now.
Yeah. And you still do think of... I think of The Dark Knight, the film, way more than I think of, oh, Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
That's more or less what you just said. But, I mean, that is a standalone to me.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I said a couple of months ago that there's nothing this year that I'm really, you know, 2 years ago at this time I was really waiting for Interstellar, and last year at this time I was really waiting for The Revenant and The Hateful Eight. A couple of months ago I said there was nothing this year like that. Now that I've seen the trailer for Birth of a Nation, I think that's changed. Yeah, it's tough to figure out what's gonna last from right now.
This is a very head scratching extra butter you've come up with here.
Yeah, well, hey, weigh in. Let us know what if anything, and I don't quite know what we're defining. I think we're talking about you know, movies that you can seriously say, this is one of the greatest movies of all time. I can do that up until about 95, because I can go to Pulp Fiction and Fargo and Silence of the Lambs and talk about those that way. A lot of people talk about Shawshank Redemption that way. Fine, you all win. But yeah, after that, after like the mid-90s, I don't know. I don't know what it is. Is it Gladiator? I haven't even seen Gladiator. Has Sean seen it? No.
Yeah, you've lost already.
Yeah.
It's not Gladiator.
No, it's probably not. And you thought, you know, you might have thought that way about The Lord of the Rings for a minute, but then that just kind of spiraled. And I don't think those hold up well. Even to go to The Force Awakens, I'm shocked at how good that was, but it's good in the way the Marvel movies are good. Like this is really, really good science fiction filmmaking that I'm pleased with and I would recommend to anybody, and it deserves to make all the money it's making, but...
That doesn't still start from a cash grab, though. I mean, that doesn't not still start from a cash grab. That's what I meant there. I mean, that's... I think about it positively, but it's still a... That's still... Let's make more money.
Well, hit us up on Twitter at truthpodcast or email us, handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com. If you don't believe that emailing works... About 9 months ago, probably a full year ago, a guy emailed me asking me to send him all of those shirts from the movie The Gallows that I got, and I finally put them in the mail today. So there you go. If you email us, we'll respond within a calendar year. I'm eager to hear what people have to say. What movies from now do you think will enjoy this status in perpetuity? That's the question.
We've got a lot of good listeners. Somebody's going to remind us both of something that we're completely, completely overlooking.
Yeah, it's, you know, I try to think about the Oscars, and it's, you know, if you look at the last couple Best Picture winners, almost all of which I liked a lot, it's not any, you know, it's not
in there.
It's not Argo, it's not The King's Speech, it's not The Hurt Locker, it's not The Artist. And I like all four of those movies quite a bit. At least one of those... At least The Hurt Locker was close to being my best movie that year. And the past 2 years, I think my number two movie was Best Picture both times. A Spotlight was my number two behind Anomalisa, standing by it. And last year, what the hell? Well, Interstellar was my number one movie. And what... See, this is the thing. I'm having trouble naming what won Best Picture last year.
Last year?
12 Years a Slave was 2 years ago. Birdman.
Yeah.
So that was my number two movie that year. But, yeah. Let us know. Andy, you have anything to plug?
Nothing much to plug at this time. Just banging away at my things. I can be heard from more at Andy W. Collier on Twitter. I talk about film and music occasionally, and it's going to be a lot of hockey right now, but...
That was good.
That was a good thing. Let's just keep it. Hope it keeps going good.
Yeah. Anything to recommend? Anything? We never do this. What are you into right now?
What am I into?
Music, movies, TV. Oh, what do you got going on? I'm watching a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and that's very good.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'll look that up promptly. Mm-hmm. For someone quite interested in film, I don't get a lot of time to sit around and watch.
Right.
So, I'm recommending the Pittsburgh Penguins right now.
Yeah, watch hockey.
There you go.
Let's give a rating to Twister and get out of here. I don't even know. I don't want to underrate something that did very well and was good at the time. And I was legitimately looking forward to seeing again. But having sat through it beginning to end... Not seeing half an hour on HBO, I don't know, a 5, a 6 if I'm in a good mood?
I'm going to have to go... Yeah, 5 was pretty right on for there. It will not be earning any 6s.
No, well, obviously, we're about the money, not about the science.
Thanks for listening to You Can't Handle the Truth. Find your hosts on Twitter
at Sean Collier, PGH,
and at Aaron Kleiber. That's Kleiber, K-L-E-I-B-E-R. And follow us at Epicast TV. Head to www.epicast.tv for more great podcasts on the Epicast Network. You can email feedback to handlethetruthpodcast@gmail.com.